Welcome to another special episode of our Work Now and in the Future Tools for Thinking podcast. Our guest today is Anjali Ramesh Babu from the Oregon Institute of Occupational Health Sciences. Anjali is a health social psychologist with a focus on individual and workplace strategies for social connection, health, and well-being. Anjali's research focuses on designing work environments that reduce loneliness and chronic illness by fostering social connection and well-being, including a project on using communal meal breaks to increase connectedness among environmental service workers in healthcare. Additional materials can be found at www.aalto.fi/futurework and then choose podcast. And without further ado, here is Anjali.
Hey everyone, my name is Anjali Ramesh Babu. I am a health psychologist by training, and I am passionate about all things social connection as a way to move past our loneliness epidemic and understand how social connection really contributes to our health and well-being. So I'm interested in, I focus on a few aspects of it. I'm interested in more the multi-level ways that we can bring change for social connection and social health and well-being. As a behavior change specialist, I'm interested in how we can motivate behavior change at the individual level. I'm also interested in how we can design work for well-being. You know, work is, we spend a good part of our waking time at work. And so what happens at work impacts our health and well-being. So how can we design work itself to promote social connection and positive social relationships on the job? And then how do we look at all of this and how do we approach social health and well-being from really equity-focused and cross-cultural approaches as well? So that's something that I'm interested in, a transdisciplinary and systems approach to bringing about positive change for social health. So in today's talk, I'll share a little bit about the importance of social health, and then we'll move on to maybe sharing a few examples from my own research in social connection. And so before moving on to social connection and how we can promote it, we could first start with understanding the importance of social health. And what is social health? And if we were looking at it from a definition standpoint, social health is the adequate quantity and quality of relationships we have in our lives. And this is something that each one of us is different. And if we feel like we have enough social connections in our life to meet our individual social needs. Now, social connection is the type of connection you have. You know, so if I asked you to think about the people in your life who you feel closest to, you would likely think of the people who have, you know, deep, meaningful relationships with you. And other connections may be less deep, but they still play a different role, like professional connections or acquaintances. So these are the different types of social connections you have. Now, we all have varying levels of social health needs. And when we don't have adequate connections in our life and we want those social connections, then that is when we feel like we are in a state of loneliness. So loneliness is the state of wanting social connections, but experiencing this inadequacy in our life. Why is this important? Because studies have shown that loneliness can bring about a number of different health issues. And I think before we move into the specific health outcomes of it, social context and social connection is one of the key drivers of our health and well-being. And so the other four recognized determinants of well-being, social determinants of health of well-being are education, access and quality, access to good healthcare, access to good housing and secure housing and neighborhood living. Of course, access to financial stability, and then social connection, social community and context. And this is also improved when we think about our experiences at work and mental health at work, this is also recognized as one of the key components, social connection is as contributing to mental health in the workplace, right up there along with, you know, how you feel about mattering at work, whether you have good work-life harmony, whether you have good opportunity for growth on your job, and whether you consider your workplace or your daily work experience good for you in some ways. And so there is a connection and community are important. And so, you know, which then begs the question, you know, we're talking so much about social health and social connection and loneliness. Why are we talking so much about it today? Because we ask ourselves, are we lonely? And is this an issue? And it turns out, yes. So if you look at Finland, for example, at least half of Finns have indicated that they have experienced loneliness at some point of time and still continue to experience this. In the United States, for example, where I come from, one in two people are lonely. Sometimes there's a one in three. The statistics vary. And one in four globally, according to the World Health Organization. So with the prevalence of loneliness being this high, we are actually in the midst of a global loneliness crisis. So we call it the loneliness epidemic. So why is this such a concern for us? Because we know from many years of research that chronic loneliness can impact our us physically and mentally. And this can happen through many different psycho-biobehavioral mechanisms. So if we look at the individual level, right, people who are lonely have an increased risk for mortality, and people who are lonely also tend to have less healthy behaviors. So if you're lonely, you're less likely to go out and seek, you know, the social support you need, which you know is important for health. You are likely to, you know, exercise less, for example, get out less, for example, and all of these in turn have impacts for other health behaviors as well. You talk about health outcomes. Loneliness can increase the risk for cardiovascular disease and stroke, and mental health concerns like anxiety and depression, and increase the risk for suicide as well. And cognitively, it increases the risk for dementia. And this is something that we found at global levels as well. Isolation can increase the risk for dementia. Now, let's move from an individual perspective to work, right? And this is something that doesn't stay at an individual level. It impacts various levels of society. And work is an example of that. So at work, we observe that when there is loneliness in the workforce, there is greater absenteeism. People who are lonely just tend to stay home, tend to not come to work, and then there's a higher turnover. And then there are studies that are starting to come out that show that increased loneliness in the workforce is linked to lower job performance, job satisfaction, a higher risk of burnout, and also worse worker-manager relationships. And now let's think even bigger globally. Right? How does loneliness impact the society at large? And if we think about that, lonely students, let's start early on across the lifespan, right? Lonely students are more likely to drop out of school. And when you drop out of school, you have diminished future prospects for a career and financial security and lack of education. And we know that, you know, as if we think back to the main determinants of health and well-being, not having good education means not having less, and at least in some societies, having less financial stability, which impacts your ability to care well for your own health. And so just in general, it diminishes future prospects for your career and your life. It also, when there's prolonged, you know, chronic and widespread loneliness, it can lead to low overall productivity, and absenteeism, as I mentioned, at the work level, but really at a larger level, it has economic impacts, right? This turnover impacts employment rates. Lonely people are more likely to, as we've learned from the science, that it can impact our health and well-being. So healthcare costs go up, and which again has these economic impacts. And from if we think about sort of lonely populations, not unlike what we're facing these days, they really lead to fractured communities in general. And so it's really all pointing toward a society that is far from thriving. So loneliness is not good at an individual level, at a work level, at societal levels, at many different levels for a thriving society. And so what needs to be done, right? So for change to happen, it needs to happen at all levels of society. So we have to figure out how to improve social connection and how to promote social health at various levels as well. So at the individual level, this would mean educating, providing good education on the importance of social health. It's also helping people at an individual level identify loneliness and what connection, social connection means to them. And this is also, I think, important to point out that, you know, we could want to be alone. That doesn't mean you're lonely, right? Loneliness only comes where you crave the social connection. You want it in your life, but you don't have access to it. And so helping people identify what their social needs are and helping them identify what social connection means to them and articulate it helps us reach ways that or identify ways that we can improve that. So just like with any other behavior change, you know, social behaviors can be taught as well. So, and this comes down to behavior change skills. How can we apply what we already know from the scientific literature on evidence-based strategies for improving social behavior? So teaching goal setting, teaching, you know, implementation intentions, we call them, where, you know, you try to make a plan, you try to identify your goals, and you try to engage in them and then try to understand how to problem solve and create these social connections in your life. And then, you know, and social behavior and social health is a very interpersonal process. So how can you involve the people in your life, just the close connections you have, to promote social health and well-being? Now, moving on to work and societal aspects of it, you know, the one thing that is important to note that social health by definition and inherently is very connected with the society you're a part of, right? Your social environment. And so it's not good enough to say, let's bring change about, you know, bring about change in the individual level. You also have to consider your social environment and how helpful, how feasible that is to help you create those social connections. So let's take the world of work, for example, right? And so when you talk about change, change would be one, recognizing the link between social health and work outcomes. As we've talked about, you know, just a few minutes ago, we know that loneliness can cause absenteeism and lower retention and lower job satisfaction. And all of these are very real work outcomes. And so how then can we design work to promote social health? So understanding the daily work experience, identifying, you know, what work looks like. And I think this is a really pertinent topic now with this really drastically increased prevalence of remote working and hybrid working. And so how do we address that? And you know, even if you do come to work every day, you can still be lonely as well. So you can, or even if you don't consider yourself lonely, you can still lack social connections at work. So then how can we promote social health at work by allowing opportunities and creating opportunities to build these meaningful, deep social connections in the workplace? Because for many of us, we meet our friends, we meet our colleagues, and then we make friends with our colleagues. And even if you don't go at the level of that deep friendship, you still need good working relationships with your coworkers and your supervisors and the leaders in order to have a good, productive, engaged work environment. And so you would also then, by extension, you would address the culture of social well-being at work. Is this something that that your organization values, for example? And then do they consider how an important consideration here is also how work and life outside of work are linked, right? And so if you are having a bad day at work, that is bound to impact you at home. And that goes vice versa. If you're having a bad day outside of it, you know, that impacts your work as well. But we know, of course, from decades of research, that having social support systems and having good social connections in our life can help us deal with those stresses. And so one, it's designing work to be healthy, but the other part of it is also having a good social community and that context to really buffer the impacts of those stress when you needed to. And then having, and at the work level, also understanding what the organizational culture and the day-to-day practices and policies are. These are the levels at which you can bring about positive change. And then from a societal level, if we're trying to address the need for change, you know, we it's how you address how to create a culture of openness. How do we create a culture of being able to talk about loneliness and to remove the stigma around it? And then and to create a culture of connection means prioritizing that in the way we design our workspaces, design our public spaces, design our social systems. And so and we know also that, you know, we have a varying level of social need across the lifespan, and understanding how those needs shift and change and vary will also allow us to develop more tailored interventions for across the lifespan. And then it's also important to consider the health and socioeconomic costs and safety costs, right? So this is something that if we have divided, isolated populations, we're just not strong in order to deal with external crises that come. So it is really very much loneliness at a really large scale, if we look at it, can be risky, can be a high-risk proposition for the national agenda as well. And so it's in the nation's interest to promote a socially healthy society and country. And I think, as I mentioned before, whatever you do, right, we have to involve experts from different fields. This can be psychologists and sociologists and economists and architects, because all of these hands go toward creating meaningful, holistic solutions that can really address those needs for change and the type of change you need at each level of society. So you need a lot of cross-sector collaboration. So that is, you know, one kind of really broad picture of how we can bring about change for social well-being. And then in the time that we have left, I'd love to share some of my own work on social connection. So, for example, I designed and one a project that I just completed was I looked at how work itself can be designed for social connection in the United States. And I specifically looked at environmental service workers. So environmental service workers are janitors in healthcare. And if we look at the work of a janitor in healthcare, you know, we know that they have a lot of life and job stress. There is a higher risk for loneliness and the disparity in occupational health outcomes. So let's see, it's very physically taxing. They're on their feet a lot. They also sometimes work in isolation in different parts of a hospital, making sure that all these inpatient spaces are clean and safe for patients and other professionals alike. This is not a particularly high paid job. And so there is some job insecurity. There's also low pay. And very often there is this feeling of being undervalued, I think, compared to other healthcare professionals. So all of this sort of increases the risk for, you know, life and job stress and the risk for loneliness as well. So how can we improve connection? Because having that social support and increasing that social support at the level of the workplace can help to buffer some of these stresses. And even if these groups are, even if these workers are not lonely, it helps to improve their social health in general. And so when I was looking at how we can tackle, change at the work design level, some key considerations were the high demand work environment. So this is pretty high demand work. There is a big need for rest and connection with workers. And then also remember that I think when we think about when we want to develop interventions and we want to conduct intervention research, one of the key considerations is you don't want the intervention itself to become burdensome for participants, for the workers, because they already have enough life and work burdens, and you don't want them to add, you don't want to add to that. And so we wanted something that could be designed that was practical, simple, and sustainable. And this happened to be the 30-minute mandated lunch break. And so all environmental service workers are have access to a 30-minute, it's a mandated meal break on the job. And we thought that if we could utilize this meal break to make it a communal meal break where people would come and eat together, then that may be a chance that would help them you know, spend time with their colleagues and start to build some relationships. And the other important consideration was that it could be integrated into it, into the daily work design. So it's not, so it's simple. You know, you already have a mechanism for it. You're not creating an additional intervention component or education or training or any of those. It's just really something that they can come and experience. And then also it would need, because it's a work design intervention, it would need the workplace leaders to take an initiative in it. And another reason why this seemed appropriate for the population we looked at is that typically workers, you know, EVS or environmental service workers tended to eat alone. So when they choose to take a break whenever they want after they finished a few tasks, they had the autonomy to say, okay, I've, you know, done this much work now, I'll take off and I'll go and sit somewhere and eat. And it turns out that for the participants in the study as well, they didn't really coordinate with their coworkers, and so this was an opportunity for us to be able to do that. And so there were three aims to this pilot project. One was to identify the current meal break practices. So how do they take their meal breaks? And then would they even want a communal meal break? You know, so it's the last thing we would want to do is to force somebody to use their break to come and sit together with somebody else if they didn't want to do that. And so we asked them in aim one, we said, well, would you want something? Would you want a communal meal break? And it turns out that they did want that. They welcomed this chance to rest and socialize and get to know their coworkers because they didn't really have any chances to do that on their job. And so we asked, and then we spoke with leaders to say, okay, how can this be possible? Because on a practical level, because this would, so having a communal meal break would mean taking employees off the floor in a really high, fast-paced, high-needs environment, right? In a hospital setting, and so it would be up to the leaders to sort of coordinate who can take their breaks at the same time, so that they can still have coverage on the floor when they need it. So a lot of the little details and getting into the weeds would be necessary to design, a work design intervention, but it is possible. And then when we got all of those perspectives from workers and we got perspectives from the leaders, then we pilot tested this communal meal break for a period of 3 months and are offering it on 3 days of the week. And we did this because, you know, these were the days that they could, that seemed practical to test this out. And so what did the implementation look like? You know, for the EVS leaders, they had to identify a location where multiple people could come together. They had to coordinate the schedules of the workers so they could take the lunch and take their lunch break at the same time. And then they would also actually communicate and send out the daily page to these workers to say, okay, your communal meal break session is on, so please come to it. And then what did participation look like for the EVS workers? They just had to show up. And so that really was very intentionally kept at a low burden level, participatory burden, as we call it. And so that we wanted to see how making it as easy as possible for the person to come and join a meal break. And then we did some post feedback. We tested this out for 3 months and then asked workers what they thought and also asked leaders. And for the staff, it looked like, you know, they enjoyed it. They said this is for example, one person said the study improved my relationship with my coworkers. And it was, you know, we were able to just take some time out to discuss our problems and share our experiences and also gives each other a perspective of what the other person is going through. And then so another person said it helped me open up, and then it helped me spend more time with others and get comfortable spending time with each other and getting to know my coworkers. And so there were some really positive aspects to it, which is promising for us. But there were also some challenges to it. And so we asked, well, if for the workers who didn't attend, we said, well, why didn't you? What was the problem there? And they said that the main reason they couldn't attend is because they, you know, work ended up coming in the way. And the break that they wanted to take a break at the time, but they couldn't do it. And so this is when we had to go back to the drawing board with the leaders to kind of figure out how can we make sure that these opportunities that we say we provide are consistently, in fact, feasible for the workers as well. Now, looking at it from an implementation standpoint, you know, the environmental service leader said overall, it was really easy to implement. They did, on a qualitative level, feel that they perceived more team spirit with their among their employees, that they would see people walking around together, for example, which they didn't, you know, walking in the corridors together and just chatting amongst themselves, which they hadn't really seen before that. And then they also wanted to continue the communal meal break. And when we asked about the cost, they said this really didn't cost them anything at all, because it really, they're just really, you know, tiny changes that you can make that don't have to have these really heavy, burdensome costs. And so that's another reason why you could, you know, it's important to address the work design level, because these are little changes you can integrate into that without making it more burdensome. And so we took all of the feedback from the employee, the workers, and the participants in the study, as well as the leaders. And then we created a leadership focused implementation guide that was informed by all of this, this kind of discussion and knowledge. And the goal really was, really from the outset of the study, to say, okay, how can we design work to improve connections, or, you know, promote social connection for these workers, and then ultimately provide an implementation guide to the leaders that they can then continue to implement the communal meal break and be able to sustain it over time. So that was, and in that guide, we talked about the study itself. We talked about, you know, what are some of the barriers and the challenges that came up, like why workers didn't participate, and what can be done to actually address those challenges in the workplace, and so that the communal meal break could continue to be implemented in a more effective way. And then, you know, in addition to that, we recommended some simple strategies that leaders could implement to create a better work environment. For example, having check-ins, 5-minute check-ins with your, EBS, with workers, to see how are you doing, allowing workers time to check in with each other as well. And then openly recognizing the importance of social health. That's a big part of any change at this level, is to create a culture where social health and well-being are recognized as important. And so once you start to prioritize it in an explicit way, you then start to plan your tasks and your day-to-day work tasks in a way that promotes that a goal. And it all goes toward creating a culture of connection. And then I think, you know, that was one example. As another example, I'll share that I am currently a Fulbright scholar from the United States, visiting Finland and working here in Tampere University. And my project here is focused on exploring the drivers of loneliness and social connection in Finland. So, you know, I'm also really interested in what we can learn from cultures around the world on social connection, because I think various cultures approach connection and social health in very different ways, but we all share some very basic human needs for connection. So what does that look like in Finland? So what are some of the workplace drivers? What are some of the cultural drivers of loneliness and connection in Finland? So I'm talking with employers here. I'm talking with employee perspectives, as well as people in the, as well as colleagues, and just, you know, I'm using this opportunity to talk to everybody, cab drivers and wherever I am outside, and just strike up a conversation and ask how things work, and trying to understand the culture a bit. And I'm also sharing this approach called Total Worker Health from the United States, which is a validated approach to worker well-being. Let's see. And so while I'm here, as I said, I'm gaining some really valuable perspectives from organizational leaders and occupational health professionals, employees, and just people. And some of the findings I'm seeing, I still have to go back and look through the findings in a more detailed way. But so far, it's been really insightful to learn about some of the cultural factors, you know, some of the shared human needs, and also arriving at constructive strategies for promoting social connection at work. And really, I think getting an umbrella perspective of social health in Finland has been really exciting and really meaningful to me as a social connection researcher. I've been talking with people about, you know, the culture and language. How does the Finnish culture play a role in well-being? how does work-life research and strategy, from a research standpoint, how does that inform well-being? I'm speaking with experts on loneliness in youth and childhood and how we can address that. And also looking at the circular economy. You know, this seems like very diverse topics, but in the end, if you think about social health, it really impacts us at very local levels, but as well as really in the, you know, meso levels and macro levels as well. And so understanding the history of work and labor relations and the and how job quality, for example, plays a role and how social health is part of job quality. You know, so understanding all of those aspects of work, but also understanding how all that plays into the larger experience within society is has been really insightful.
So what do you think is would be the first and most important step to start take towards improving the situation, to kind of turning the curve so that it wouldn't be increasing loneliness, but the other way around? So what would your policy advice be?
That is an excellent question. I think at a the foundational level, it has to do with recognizing that this is an issue, right? And I think we have more and more societies are realizing that, you know, loneliness is actually something we can identify. And and then once we are able to identify it, and then when you have, you know, strategies toward it, when on a public health level, I think this has, you know, many, many countries are taking notice to the point that they're releasing advisories on that. They some countries are building a strategy for how we can move past the loneliness epidemic. So that has been step one, right? But I think at a, what I would beyond that, and that is a good, that is an essential piece of it, because once you recognize it, then you start to mobilize resources toward it.
Can I ask here that what do you think is the biggest obstacle in the in recognizing? Because one would think in layman's terms that, well, you know, what's not to see? So what do you think is the biggest obstacle? Why is it difficult to even recognize? Yeah.
Then that is another excellent question, because I think on some levels, loneliness can be quite a subjective experience, right? It's not something that you can say, oh, you know, I have a heart issue or something physical, or, you know, it's very, very often you're having to infer this from the outcomes that you're seeing and trying to relate it back. But this is not from the lack of the science on it, because we know now from years of research that loneliness has very real physical health ramifications. And those physical ramifications also reflect at a mental health way. And then that can affect, that can impact. Now we're able to say from, you know, more and more research coming out that it impacts it at a work level as well. But I think even at an individual level, you know, understanding loneliness, one, can be tricky because we don't often recognize it. But also it's not something that we want to admit. Right. It's not something it's a loneliness is not a pleasant feeling. And so saying it out loud, you know, is can be quite hard on oneself. And then also, I think what can be harder is our society has changed so much. Right. We spend more and more of our time by ourselves in isolation. We know we spend this. We spend a large amount of time online and doing, you know, in other realms, but not at this very physical, personal, in, you know, sharing the same space. And that has got to impact, you know, that. So one part is not understanding or not wanting to identify or call it out, but also you don't really know what to do about it. Okay, let's say I'm, what next? And so that's what hard. And I think at higher levels too, you know, it takes a while for workplaces or societies to say, well, what can we actually do about it? But I think fortunately there is more of a realization of it because we have reached those crisis points. And very often, you know, although we would like to look at it from a preventive standpoint and say, oh, let's just all be in a good, you know, socially healthy community, it takes us to hit that rock bottom to finally say, oh, okay, we need to pay attention to move toward it. And so to your other question of, you know, what's the number one way to influence policy? It would really be to recognize, one, that this is an issue, but also importantly, recognize that there are things that can be done at every level of society. It's not somebody else's problem.
What would you recommend to someone who's just listened to this podcast? And is now thinking that, okay, I actually can see in my personnel data that we have an increased situation of loneliness in this organization, regardless of what the organization is. What would your science-based recommendation be for the first step to take? What to do?
Yeah, and you're talking about it from a work level or an individual
Yeah,
perspective?
this no organizational level, on
Oh,
the
yeah.
level of the workplace. Someone who has, say that it's an HR manager. A lot of our listeners are HR professionals. What are they going to do? What's the first step to take towards diminishing, preventing, improving the situation?
Again, great question, because there are different ways that you can approach this. It's very easy for some organizations to eat. I think often organizations will maybe start at the level of providing surveys. It goes at the employee engagement surveys, for example, and asking people if they are experiencing loneliness. But that's not really, that's a way to do it. But I think also it's possible that organizations feel like there isn't loneliness in their organization, in their company. Everyone seems fine. Why should we kind of raise a red flag when there's not any, or risk raising that red flag? But really, there are ways, regardless of whether there is loneliness or you want to tap into it, it doesn't take away from the fact that you have to have a good working environment, right? And that means having a good, socially healthy work environment. There are things that you can do as an organizational leader that says, okay, what do I have a good workplace culture, for example? Am I working my employees way too hard? Do they have the time on their job to even to talk with their employee, to their coworkers? Do they have the time to go take their kids to school? Do they have enough bandwidth and to emotional, social bandwidth to go home and then be able to live a good quality, to have a good quality evening with their family, for example. So it's those things that I think really reflecting on how the work impacts the health and well-being of your employees, that would be a good starting point. So even if you don't know the first thing about improving social connection, make sure you can provide these little touch points, little opportunities for people to engage.
So if I understand you correctly, that would be like the first step would be to examine the organizational culture and identify that are there times, availabilities there to even meet if you want to meet, sort of like, and then also taking a very holistic examination of the sort of how, what's the employee experience in my organization,
Absolutely.
and
And
does that, if you like, allow for meeting or like, if you like, doing things together apart from work and even working together, like you said. So that would be the sort of like recommended route towards this. Otherwise, maybe difficult, can be a bit difficult or like you said, subjective or even like very intimate topic to bring up.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think for if you're hesitant to get into the weeds on that, into the really asking people how do you feel, if you can have a positive work environment, that's good. But I also want to say one thing, especially when it comes to social health and connection, it is not good enough to say we'll have a potluck once a month, or to say, it's good if you have that, wonderful, continue it. But for recognize that, social connection, for so any social connection in your own life, think about it, right? Any relationship to develop meaningfully, you have to have that consistency of opportunity, to those touch points, as I said. So what can you do on a daily basis that can be easily integrated? So keep it practical, keep it simple. And that often comes to how the work day is organized. And this is also important because we are at a time where we work remotely a lot. We work, in hybrid ways a lot. There's all contract work is quite prevalent. And so it's really how can you foster that belongingness, the feeling of belonging amongst your employees. And so are there, it's creating spaces, for example. It's openly recognizing that, we would love for all of you to have, a good social working relationship with your workers. So it's calling it out at that level, and following that up with action of, and creating little opportunities at the workplace as a part of the culture.
I think that's great advice. I hope everyone listening is going to do take a step towards that. That's a great advice from so many other perspectives. I think I have one more question that I would like to pose to you. You mentioned now that this research visit to Finland has been very fruitful for you, and that you've gained a lot of perspective. Now, I know that Finns are always very curious to hear how they compare with others. So would you like to highlight maybe some of the biggest cultural differences that you can see? Now, from the perspective of your research, of course, from your work, from the concepts, like what do you think are the striking differences or similarities that you've come across? I think, sorry, if I can just still specify, you, if I understand you or know you correctly, you will be actually speaking from at least three cultural, comparing three cultures rather than two.
Yes, thank you. I was going to bring that up. So I grew up in India. And I live in the U.S. and lived there for a while. And so I have kind of a, I think that's why this cross-cultural approach is so important to me, because I think when I, having grown up in India, it's a different experience, right? You have really connected social groups, you have families, a big part of your day-to-day life at every level and in different parts of your life. And coming into and in the United States, you know, it's different. And then coming to Finland as well, you know, that's a whole other different aspect as well. So what are some of the differences? I can probably speak from observation as well, but also from the research that's coming up is, you know, some of the things that we hear about Finns. Oh, we don't engage in small talk, for example, right? We tend to be more reserved, for example.
Right.
And yes, all of those things, you know, seem to be quite prevalent, and I think recognized by many, openly kind of addressed in, it keeps coming up as a theme in our, when I'm conducting these interviews. But also, you know, we have a shared need for social health. And so it's when, once you do get down to that level of getting to know each other and providing the that's why I keep saying providing the opportunity to come to connect together and having that, that's when you people start to open up. And I think it, even if it takes a little bit longer for Finns, I think to open up is what is the impression is what I'm hearing. There is that willingness to dive deep and to build that relationship. And I think in that way, we're all connected. It's the same social needs we have, whether we're from, you know, varying parts of the world globally. It's just our basic social need. And so some of the, because in my study, I'm also asking, what are some strategies you could have to build social connection? And, you know, if you think about it, it's very real things. Like, I wish I had more time to get to know my coworkers. I wish I had the opportunity to get to know my coworkers. Because I work remotely now, so I don't really get to see them. And just meeting solely on Teams or, you know, online, we don't really get to have that in-person connection. And that is so essential for us to build these social relationships. But again, you know, it's to say that in that way, I think I would say that it's, we all share some basic human needs and also share some basic strategies as well. When we talk about how we can improve it, you know, that doesn't differ from culture to culture, but it's how we can approach social connection, maybe from different levels and different ways. But ultimately, we do get to social connection. And I think we do get to those deep, meaningful relationships. And I think that's what is at its core, the important part of it.
So the good news is that even if we are different and we struggle with this now, we still can find the universal need and kind of, if we apply ourselves a little bit, this is something that we could remedy in all organizations globally.
Absolutely. And I think that's, and the fact that loneliness seems to be prevalent, not just in one society or another, is quite telling. It's really everywhere. It's a global phenomenon. And I think that finally attests to the fact that we do need those deep connections, which can be more challenging in the time, given the times we live in. And, you know, it can lead to some, you know, some not ideal solutions, like workplaces saying, oh, you better come to work and it'll all be fixed. And those are not really the ways we should be going, because you don't force, you know, you don't kind of force people to do what they don't want. You don't want to take away autonomy. But there are ways that you can bring subtle, simple changes to an environment or to, you know, through these little opportunities for connection that can go a long way.
That's a great place to stop. That means that everyone can start with the sort of think of a small baby step to start with.
Absolutely.
And this wonderful lecture has given you plenty of ideas of what are the sort of central elements and what to start with. I would like to thank you wholeheartedly for taking this time to speak with us and tape your thoughts, and this way being able to feed some food for thought for others thinking about these things in organizations, in world of research, wherever our listeners are. But thank you so much for your time, and we wish you a safe flight back home.
Thank you so much.
And hope to see you many times over when you next time you come to Europe or Finland.
I certainly hope so too. Like, I've built some connections here, so
yes, you have.
Social well-being.
I think so.
I look forward to that.
Thank you. Thanks a lot. Thank you for listening. The podcast is a collaboration between Aalto University's Future of Work, Hanken School of Economics, the Finnish Association of Work-Life Research, and the Work 2030 program.